Welcome to the Grand Connection Podcast, your home for grand growth through collaboration. This is your space to connect, create, and collaborate in a community of heart-centered entrepreneurs and change makers. Hosted by our community, this podcast brings collaboration to life. You will meet members who share their wisdom, offer insights and practical tips, and even interview each other. If you're ready for more clarity, stronger connections, and better results in your business, you are in the right place. Listen in, connect with us, and be part of something grand. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Grand Connection Podcast. I'm Susan Jarema, your host for today and co-founder of the Grand Connection, where we believe business grows through meaningful relationships, trusted connections, and collaboration. At the Grand Connection, we often talk about our CCC framework, connect, create, collaborate. First, we connect through meaningful relationships. Then we create trust, ideas, opportunities, and understanding together. And from there, true collaboration can happen. Today, we're exploring one of the most important skills behind all of that, understanding people. Our guest today is Alan Stevens. I'm so excited, Alan. I have to say that this has been really exciting. And Alan is an international profiling and communication specialist and creator of the Rapid Trait Profiling System. Alan has worked with organizations including Disney Films, Gillette, educators, business leaders, law enforcement, and media professionals. Alan has been a wonderful collaborator within our Grand Connection community, speaking at many events, generously referring others, and becoming very well-loved within the community for his conversations and podcast interviews. And I've also had the pleasure of meeting Alan twice now in person, which always feels like the icing on the cake when we built so many great connections virtually first. Alan, welcome to the Grand Connection Podcast.
Thanks very much. And next time that I'll have to come over and see you instead of you coming over here twice.
Yeah, it is my turn for you to come visit me. And I'm going to show you a lot of snow. You're in Canada. So I want to jump into this right away. What does profiling or reading people actually mean? Because I know we're all curious about this.
Yeah, well, first of all, when people usually hear the word profiling, they think forensics and they go into panic straight away. And they go, no, it's more of an approach of being able to read somebody to understand their personality so you can create a stronger relationship with them. It's about bringing people together, not trying to uncover criminals and things like that. I just want to know if I meet somebody, I want to know how to talk to them in the way that they need to be spoken to and build that relationship very quickly.
Well, I have to say that when I first met you, I was a little nervous. I felt like, oh my gosh, he's going to be able to like know everything about me. But no, you are just a really great person. You're here in this space because you care about people. And how did you get into this field?
Well, mainly because I was pretty crook at it. I went through two divorces, a lot of broken relationships, and even business partners who emptied the bank out. And it was after my second divorce, I thought, I need a better way of reading people. I've been working with body language, body language, NLP, doing all the different systems I could to find out how to read people, Myers-Briggs, disc profiling, etc. But at the turn of the century, I love that term, turn of the century. It sort of makes me feel very old. But that was when I realized I needed a better system. And somebody said to me, you ever looked at reading faces? And I went, well, this sounds pretty interesting. I'm going to go and find out about it. I found Paul Ekman, who did all the research on the micro expressions, and an English lady living in California who worked with all the facial features, trained with both their groups, then realized that what they were doing needed to be put together. And that's when I created Rapid Trait Profiling.
Okay, so you've been researching this for a while. How many years have you been in this space?
Almost 2.5 decades.
Oh my gosh. Well, that is a long time. That is turn of the century. I've been in this space for quite a while too. We won't talk about that right now, but it's lovely to have that experience behind us and it's fun to be able to share it with people. And I know that's what you're doing now. So why do people instantly connect while others struggle?
Usually it's a difference in our personalities and that when we meet people. Most people, even if they struggle meeting people, there's usually some people they connect with quicker anyway. And that'll be because there's a similarity in their personalities. Some people just don't have the ability to read people because they weren't taught. You know, we have a number of conditions in very young children that they can't recognize facial features or expressions. And that's what we need to be able to recognize. We can see that. We know somebody's personality. We know who they are. We know what they're feeling. We know whether we should be around them or not. And that's part of survival as a child. But in most cases, it usually comes down as we're getting older. It's a lack of being able to understand the other person. And until we can understand the other person, we're going to have problems.
I think a lot of times people are in their own head and not paying attention to the other person either, right?
Yeah, well, if you're having a conversation, how often does a person who you're talking to jump in straight away afterwards? And the reason for that is that, well, we're all schizophrenic as far as I'm concerned in our heads. We're having two conversations all the time. While somebody is talking to us, we're thinking about how we're going to respond to them. And then when we're talking to them, we're thinking about what we're saying. We're not focusing on them. And you'll find the people who usually wait a little bit moment after somebody's finished speaking, that they're actually been listening to what the person's been saying. And in that moment after, then they're thinking about, how do I respond to this?
It's really hard on Zoom too, because you're kind of like watching cameras and things are popping up around you. Like it, I find when I'm having coffee with somebody in a coffee shop, I'm just like there. I'm right there with them. But it's difficult. There are so many more distractions when we're sitting at our desk in our own home, trying to have a conversation. Even right now, while I'm doing this conversation with you, I'm thinking about, how am I going to make this a really interesting podcast? That little voice is going in there, and I want to make sure the questions are good and that I'm moving on sometimes a little too quickly to the next question before I'm listening to you. So I see that I'm doing that myself right now.
It's something you ask yourself, why are you doing that? Because I know that you're passionate about what you do. You're passionate about the network and the people you're working with. So center of mind is always going to be, how do I get the best out of this podcast for the people who I'm going to show this to? Yeah. So it's a genuine interest in other people that's causing you to rush.
Yeah.
But when you're having a one-on-one conversation with somebody, that's when you can see the difference.
So what are people communicating before they even speak? What happens there? Like, you know, I guess you talked about it being in our heads.
Well, we look at somebody straight away. We're going to look at their facial features, et cetera, their body and all the rest of it. And we make an impression straight away. Everybody is a profiler. Everybody reads other people and they straight away have an idea of who that person is. They make a judgment of them. And it's quite judgmental because it's based on their past experiences. And so straight away, that's what's going to happen. You look at somebody, you've made an interpretation of who they are. It's less than a second. It's around about 300 milliseconds. But when you look at somebody, you've already worked out whether you like them or not, whether you trust them, whether there's something wrong with them. It's that fast. It's faster than a second.
And I guess we don't even know what we're looking at. This is all subconscious for most of us, except you understand it.
That's it.
You've gotten aware of what it is. So tell us, what are you looking for when you're connecting with somebody?
Well, it depends on the situation. If it's on Zoom, I'm not going to be worried about how much space they need when we meet them for the first time, because if I want to connect with somebody, I want to make sure they're comfortable. And there are those people, like you and I are both affable. We'll stand close to people when we meet them for the first time, so that's fine. But there are people who are more discerning. They need more space, and the face will tell us that straight away. So as they're walking towards us, we know not to invade their space, because we invade their space, they're not going to be listening to what we're saying. They're going to feel uncomfortable. So we know how to structure that. So the face tells us everything we need at the moment, or well before the moment that we need it.
So if I'm in a meeting in person, so we're doing networking in a room, and you step in, you're too close to somebody, I guess you tend to get the feeling they'll step back, right?
Mm.
So you've invaded their personal space too much there. Or I guess there'd be some sign on their face where they're looking a little anxious.
Well, that's right. And quite often in those enclosed areas, in a networking room, for instance, there's not much room to move. But instead of them moving back, because they can't move back, it's going to walk into other people, so they're virtually stuck where they are, you'll see it on their body language, you'll see it in the expression on their face. You'll see a shift in there. You'll even see if there's no change in light. Even the pupils will change size depending on whether they're in fear or whether they're aroused or whatever it might be. There's so many indicators.
So what's an indication that somebody's aligned with you and as a person you can trust?
Well, one of the things is their body language will be aligned. They'll step in when they're talking to you or you're talking. They're going to be nodding. The whole body language is going to be pointing towards you. And by the way, it's a combination of all the body language. For instance, folded arms used to be meaning that somebody was disinterested. They were switched off. It could be that they're intimidated by you, your position. They may really want to know more. But what's the rest of the body language saying? Are they leaning in? Are they talking to you and nodding in response to what you're saying? Or are their feet and half their body facing towards the door? Well, then
I do fold my arms when I'm. I do fold my arms when I'm cold, though. I do.
You know, so, I've got damaged shoulders, so I'll stand there with my arms folded as well.
Yeah. So you got your the folding, and you notice stuff on their faces too. I remember when we met, we actually sat in a coffee shop, and you people walking down the street, you were profiling them for me. Now, how do you do that? That's pretty amazing. Like they weren't even that close to us.
Well, I'm picking out the particular indicators on the face that I could see. For instance, if they're walking at a distance from us, I can see the proportion between their upper body and lower body. I know straight away whether that person needs to be able to sit if you're talking to them, or they need to be on the move. So I'd know what sort of career would suit them. Would it be a receptionist? Would it be working in construction, working outside? So some of those things I can see straight away.
Okay.
As they get closer, there's other indicators because everything is stored on the face as well as in the body as well. But the main thing is in the face because everything we feel, we express outwardly. And so if you're concentrating and thinking in a certain way, the end result is, like at the moment you're concentrating, I can see those little vertical lines start to appear. Yeah. So you're thinking about how exact this thing is. You're looking at the detail that we're talking about. So I know that you're focused on getting
things leaning right. In a little bit too. So that means I'm interested that happens.
That's it. So just on the face as well, I've got that as well. So then you've got, as you said, your person's leaning in. Is their body facing towards you when they come up to you? But if they're at a distance, I can tell you where they get to us, whether they need to sit down, if we have a long conversation, or do we need to get up and walk around? If they're 20 feet away, I can see straight away where they need space when we first meet. So I'll walk up, stop, if I know they need more space, and I'll stop and I'll put my hand out to shake hands. They will set their own space up where they're comfortable. So I've gotten rid of that issue out of the way. Then I know straight away from their face, while we're talking, how much information do they want to take in? Has it got to be in a certain formatted order? Or can I bounce around the place? Have they got a dry wit where somebody who will joke and everything else? Or do I have to be very careful about being politically correct about things? Because I've got a couple of mates, when we start talking, we throw all sorts of stuff around and we're laughing. But we're also careful about who's around us. People with the opposite trait may take offense to what we're saying. So we're mindful of that as well. This is where this really helps, being able to not only have a conversation with somebody, but be respectful of the people around you as well.
So you're actually being aware of everything going on in the room.
That's it.
Yeah. Sometimes we're pretty loud. We've got a loud family. Hey, I'm looking around a restaurant and seeing these little larks at us, right?
Well, I first met one guy, and we met in a hotel in a bar, and there were about 60 tables in the place and people sitting at every table. I think between he and I with Joe, this is the moment we met each other. We just really clicked. We were laughing and everything else. We made more noise than the whole 60 tables put together. So.
You're not usually that you're pretty quiet normally, aren't you?
Yeah, well, with this particular gentleman, we just clicked really fast. But normally, yes, because I'm always thinking about it. Like when we met for the first time, I wanted to know about you. As far as I'm concerned, I didn't need to know about me. I wanted to know about you. You've come all this way, so I'm giving you that respect as well. It's all about consideration for the other person. It's not about using it to manipulate somebody, but how do I really show the deepest respect for that person? How do I build a strong relationship with them? Because I look at everything, well, if I'm in business, I look at everything as a strategic alliance. And to have a strategic alliance, because I don't believe in competition, I look at all my competitors as strategic alliances, so I'm going to build a strong relationship with them.
Yeah. So I just kind of want to know, we do a lot of one-on-one calls in the Grand Connection. And so we're getting it on a Zoom call. Like, what would be some technique somebody can apply to make their calls go better from what you teach?
Well, one of the things I always do, whether it be a live one or on Zoom, when I'm meeting somebody for the first time, I want to get them talking before they ask me about what I'm doing. You know, if I'm in a networking do, for instance, I'll actually say to somebody, tell them my name because that's respectful. But then before they get a chance, I'll ask them, well, you know, you're here today. How can I help you? Why did you come here today? And get them talking about that. If I'm on a Zoom call, I've met somebody on a, we've met through LinkedIn or somewhere like that, or somebody's introduced us. First thing I'm going to do some research, first of all. I'm going to look at their profile, find out a little bit about them. Now, this is where AI can be quite helpful. You can get their website or their LinkedIn profile and say, right, just give me a summary of this person. And it will tell you the key points. And you ask it a couple of questions. So when you talk to that person the first time, you can say, look, from what I've been realizing about you, I can see that you do these things. What got you into this? Why are you passionate about this? And now you've got them talking about them.
Yeah.
And once you've got that conversation going, you've also then got the expressions on their face, little twitches and micro expressions, they call them, which will tell you how much they're getting involved in this. You can see in their eyes.
So we just had a previous episode with Shannon Granger, and she talked about her deal flow framework. And D is discovery, which is what you just talked about. So, Alan, you're doing it. You probably didn't even know that. I'm going to introduce you to Shannon. You guys need to meet. I told her about you. You take the LinkedIn profile, you get a summary, you're ready, you've got some good questions, probably some very good open-ended questions. Now you're having this conversation. What are you watching for in their face?
Well, I'm looking for the expressions, changes, et cetera. See, at the moment, where you're sitting, because I know that you're interested in what we're doing, so I'm looking for changes in the size of the pupil, for instance. If I notice they get smaller, because I know that I can see the light through your window, so yours are small at the moment because of the light. But if I'm talking to somebody, now I know the benchmarked them. And so if there's a change in the size, I know the interest level is how it's going. It's going up or it's going down. I'm looking for the way you're looking at the screen, for instance. If I can see that some of the, these little lines appearing or the different muscles on the face moving, I know how you're thinking. Is this that, you're thinking about, well, this is really interesting. What should I ask about this? I'm looking for all of those indicators that are on the face. And your face will just give away everything that we need to know while you're having that conversation.
Well, I've been known to be an open book.
Well, there's a lot of people out there who believe they're not an open book, but the people who believe that they can tell stories and get away with it, that they can pick up lies very easily. Well, there's a bridge in Sydney on that I'd like to sell them. Because then we find the people have that high opinion that they're the easiest ones to convince the other way.
So we talk a lot about trust at the Grand Connection, connect, create, collaborate. The second part, create, is really creating trust, really creating those relationships that create ideas, opportunities. But it all is this relationship you're building of trust. Now, in a conversation when you're watching people, how do you sense through the skills you have if this is a person you can trust?
It'll be in the way in which they've answered the questions as well, because it's also the paralanguage. So we're looking at the facial features that tell us their personality. Then we're listening. We worked out what words we're going to use, the structure of them. They're going to be in a structured order, bounce around the place, etc. How much detail and all the rest. But then listening to the other person, the paralanguage they're using, the body language that goes with it, and the expressions. You put all that together and you start to see shifts. You're looking for changes. And so once you start to see a change, you go, okay, what did I just say then? Why was that? See, a micro expression, a little twitch on the face. I might be talking about something, we're going really well, but I mentioned something, all of a sudden there's a little twitch on the one side of the face. I know what I just said hit the or contempt button. And so I might have been too jovial about something, and that's then hit your values. And so I might see that little twitch and I go, I just said something wrong then. So I can then go back and I can correct things.
How would you correct it?
Well, it depends on what I've actually said and how severe it's going to be. It might be a full-on apology.
I guess you could clarify. And would you say something like did something offend you, or would you actually come out and say something, or would you just try to sort of weave it back in? And
well, I might make a comment about, Yeah, what I just said was really totally wrong. That was stupid of me or something, whatever, and steer it down that direction so I can sort of make an apology or correct myself without telling them that I've just realized, yeah, that I picked it up on their face.
Yeah.
That this is something I've realized that I just did. Yeah, I've just been silly. I've just been, yeah, we've been having a good time and I just got a little bit overboard and that was inappropriate. Sorry about that type thing.
Well, you see a lot of that when politics creep into conversations because you don't really know people's political preferences and you'll see these little twigs and you go, okay, they are the other side or whatever.
That's right.
Like, I'm just going to be careful in here. I'm going to be Switzerland.
Well, this is where it's wise. Now, they said religion, sex, and politics. Don't talk about those three.
Yeah, no, keep them out of your conversations if you can. I mean, it does come up, especially like with the global community here. You know, we do get politics coming up in it, but it's only after you get to know people. I think I would not bring that up in a first conversation.
Oh, that's it. But yeah, I always say it goes back to one of my first rules, and that is you've got two eyes, two ears, and one mouth. Use them in that proportion. And when you're using your mouth, ask every possible question you can think of. And then once you've done that, ask one more. And it's always a case of I've asked a lot of questions and I'm going to say to somebody, well, from what you've been telling me, this is what I understand. Have I got it right? The beautiful part of that is if you have got it right, they will say yes and they know that you've been listening, you've been focused on. So you've got trust. If they say no, that could even be better now because we're into a full depth conversation, not just me talking to them, but now having a conversation with them where they now explain to me what I got wrong. And they know at that point, I'm truly invested in understanding them and building a relationship. So by asking questions before you make statements, it's like somebody says something that pushes one of my buttons. I'm not going to respond in kind. I'm going to turn around and try and understand, well, what was it you were trying to really say then?
We did a episode on Chris Voss and how he's a negotiator for the FBI and has written a book on communication skills. It's really, you can use it and apply it to all parts of your life, but asking impactful questions like that makes such a big difference. And
that's it.
Trying to do that more in my own life practice. Yeah. Great. Yeah. So great tip there. So what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes people make in networking conversations?
Well, first of all, when they get into any network and that, the whole thing is networking is about building relationships. It's not about selling. How often do you hear people come in and the first thing they do is talking about their business and it's all about what they can do for people, et cetera. You know, when I go into a networking group for any, as I said before, is first thing I'm going to do is ask the other person about them. What is it they do, et cetera. Get them talking about that. Why are they passionate about doing that? Who do they help? How do they help them? And then how can I help them help other people? And so we're looking at doing that. So it's about building that relationship. But most people, you know, I've been into chambers of commerce back in the 90s when I first started my first business. And I'd ask people and that who came here to sell? All the hands would go up. And they go, who came here to buy? Not one hand. And the end result was I went, right, so you've come here to talk at each other, not to each other. And so, and I remembered a friend, lady who became a friend over a long time, a period ago. I met her. She said, when she first met me, and it must be about 15 years ago now, she said, the first thing you did when you came up to me is you told me your name and then you asked me, how could I help you? And she said, I've never forgotten it.
Yeah.
And that's how our relationship started. And that's one thing to remember. It starts in the first instant. It's not something that, you know, all of a sudden happens down the track. It started very early in your first connection with somebody because, as I said before, in less than a second, they've decided whether they like you or not, whether they trust you. They just look at your face, and all of that is based on their past experiences. So it's bias.
Yeah, amazing. And it's primarily subconscious, all this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like a micro expression. When that happens around you, somebody says something happens, unconsciously we react and we have an expression on our face, then our conscious mind steps in and that expression changes. And that can be as fast as a fifth of a second down to 1/5 of a second, virtually the click of the fingers. It's that fast. But our eyes can pick it up.
So I guess a technique for trying to build trust is to be very present, be in the moment, and channel that compassion towards the other and true interest in the other person, and they will feel it.
That's it. What helped me in doing this was realizing that I needed to practice with having conversations with people and focusing on them without having an agenda of, you know, talking to people who were not involved in a sale. They weren't possible clients or anything like that. I found a thing on, you know, online, which is now closed. It was called Lunch Club. That was a great place to go and meet people and have a chat. People from all over the world with no agenda other than to meet them and find out about them. That's since closed, but there's another one that opened up, and I'm now on that one as well, called VMe. And I was on there last night with a gentleman who's English, living over in Denmark, and we were just laughing so much. We had a great time. Now, so at the end of that, by the time we'd finished the conversation and the way I was watching him, et cetera, I know I can trust him. I know his passion for helping people, et cetera. I decided I needed to get this out to more people who could go out and deliver it to more people again, because I can only train so many in a lifetime. But if I train those people and they go out and train others, it's almost looking like, you know, network marketing, where you work with so many people, they go out and work with so many people, they go out with so many more people. And I believe that's the way that we should all be doing it, leaving the world in a better place than we found it.
And well, I love this. Network marketing to make the world a better place. That's great. Just paying it forward and having other people share your legacy. A very lovely approach to thinking of this, and so valuable for our world right now. I want to just jump back just as we sort of end off. This is part one of two parts. Some skills that we can take away today. So what could we do with our face or anything we're doing to be seen as more memorable and trusted in conversations? Because we feel like we are, but sometimes people don't take what we do the right way. And maybe we're not presenting ourselves in the best way.
See, it's not so much what we can do with our face, because as I said before, micro expressions happen in the unconscious section with something said or that happens around us before our conscious mind steps in. So if we're trying to think about keeping our face in a certain way, our body's going to give it away. We can't control everything. So it's virtually comes from within, not from without. It's a case of, well, how do I actually, you know, really show I'm genuine? Well, it's simple. Be genuine. That's what it comes down to. The bottom line is, go, okay, I'm getting a conversation. Yes, I want to improve my life. I want to improve my business, etc. But knowing, well, there was a saying there before. I know Richard Branson and a whole bunch of others have used it as well. And that was, if you want to look after your customers, you've got to put your staff first. Because when you put your staff first, they're the ones working with the customers, and you're actually putting your customers first by putting your staff first. That's a bit plays with people's minds when they try and start thinking
about
that.
No, you just got me all messed up, but I'm going to re-listen to it, so I'll be fine on the second round.
So if we do that, then the end result, we focus on the other person, we're going to grow our business faster. We're going to get what we're looking for faster because we've built that relationship. So forget about what I want right now, other than the one thing I do want to do is build a stronger relationship. That's the only focus I've got. So therefore, everything I do from there goes on to the focusing on the other person. How can I listen to them genuinely? So if I want to appear that I'm listening to them genuinely, I've got to be doing that in the first place.
Consistent. This ties in so well with what we're doing in our neuroscience of communication self-mastery program, because we're learning how brain network switching can be used to calm yourself, tap into your salient network, but to be used in a fast and efficient way to be focused, but yet stay calm and connected to the values that are part of what's important to you, and connect with what Ray calls neuroresonance with the other person in the room too. So if you're both doing it, and she teaches us how to do mindful conversations, and I don't know if you have met Ray yet, but I'm sending you an introduction to her as well. So another intro for you. This is what we do with the Grand Connection. You're going to have a fabulous conversation. That's what we're doing, is we're practicing these mindful conversations, how to be present, how to be very mindful. So we're actually sharing those values beforehand and during the conversation. And of course, it makes all the difference in having a very good conversation where you're building that trust, you're communicating effectively, and you're leaving in a place where both people have moved towards a better relationship for you know, collaboration, strategic alliances, whatever it is. Maybe it's just, you know, getting along better at family dinner, you know, whatever.
Exactly.
There's so many places that this comes into place in your life. Oh my gosh, this has been really amazing. How does stress change the way we communicate?
Well, stress is going to, our focus then goes on ourselves, the stress that we've got, et cetera. Now, from the point of view, having the stress yourself, and that this is going to impact on how you talk, how you listen, because you're going to be focused on what's bothering you. But if somebody else has got the stress, this is where you can really step in and be, you know, really helpful. Because if you recognize that they're getting stress, et cetera, well, one of the things, signs of stress is in the pupil, in the iris itself. Irises can actually shrink in size. There's a medical condition for it, but there's also, if somebody's really stressed, the irises will start getting smaller. There used to be a saying that if somebody had beady eyes, you couldn't trust them. Well, the thing is that somebody who's got those really small irises, they look like beady eyes, they're going through one of the highest levels of stress. You know that their life is, they're feeling that it's rubbish, it's crap, it's never going to change. They can be to the point of being suicidal, etc. And so by recognizing that, instead of pulling away from them, which is our normal thing when we see those small eyes, is to actually see if we can build a relationship with them, find out what's going on. Because if you're generally connected to other people and want to be connected to them, you will then focus on those things. You'll put whatever you're feeling at the time, that little pushback that you're getting inside of yourself when you look at somebody, you go, hang on, this is not the true story. There's something else going on here. It's not that I can't trust them. The fact is that they don't trust anybody else because of their stress levels. And if I pull back, I'm just confirming that for them. But if I come forward and have a bit of a conversation with them, see if I can help them and understand what's going on. And if I can help them through that, that can change their lives. And just in helping somebody else change their life, it changes yours as well.
I know you do a lot of work with helping people change their lives, don't you? What are some of the charities you're involved in? Do you want to share a little bit about that?
Well, I started the Campfire Project. It's not a charity, but it's a safe place for men and women from all over the world to tell their stories. I started out originally with only interviewing men, but had women in the group from day one because I wanted the women to be able to hear how men could speak when they felt safe to do so. And I didn't interview the women first because I knew if I interviewed the women first, the men wouldn't start. They'd feel intimidated because women are much more open, they're more natural. The guys have been taught, especially us baby boomers, we were taught, suck it up, push it down. You also don't cry. Now, I get a man on the screen with me and I can see them holding back tears and they start to tear up a little bit. I would just say to them, you think that's crying? That's crap. I'll show you how to cry if you like. Yeah, here's an example of it. Yeah, because the strength is not in holding it down. The strength is in showing the courage to be able to let it out. And so with that, having those conversations with those people, had one-on-ones, then brought them into panel discussions. Then the women said, well, we love these guys. We've never heard men talk about their emotions so deeply or so wisely about how to improve society. So they wanted to get involved. So I then started interviewing the women. We've had panel discussions. We've covered everything you can think of. We've had menstruation, menopause, does size matter in the bedroom, all the different toxicities and anything you want to talk about, we'll talk about. We've never had any bigotry, sexism or racism. The group now has the highest score when it comes to inclusion worldwide. When you look at what makes an inclusive group, it also ticks 5 of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, which is pretty high as well. And then the Campfire Project led on to the Business of Smiles, which is a charity with our socks. And I know you've got a pair.
Yeah, I know. I don't have them with me right now.
There we go.
But yes,
we got the black ones as well. And there's a story behind those. But we go out into the public and we talk to people on the streets. They could be politicians, professionals of all forms, people living on the streets. And we'll sit down next to them. We'll have a conversation with them. We usually gift them a pair of socks and thank them for doing the best they can. And when they say, what the hell are you talking about? We go, well, do you make the best decisions with the information you have? You don't just obviously go out and make deliberate bad ones. You make the best decisions you can with your family, your friends, if you're at work, your colleagues and everything. They go, yes, of course we do. And we gift them a pair of socks and we tell them the story of the socks. And usually that leads into a conversation where they tell us their life stories. And we've handed out tens of thousands of those socks and had tens of thousands of conversations with people. And in that, you've got no choice to listen to somebody. And this has been the best education for me to walk my talk. If I'm telling other people you need to pay your attention to other people on this, I've talked with people who are like males who are transitioned to females, females who are transitioned to males, all the different religions, cultures, etc. And I've never had a boring conversation yet. When somebody opens up and tells us their life stories, etc., or why they're doing what they're doing, I can understand them. I'm not looking to see whether I agree with them. I'm looking at understanding where they're coming from, what's happened in their life. That understanding then gets rid of the judgmental side of things, and I can then look at them and go, okay, well, and in the conversation, if I don't think they're doing the right thing, I can ask questions that gets them thinking, well, maybe I'm not doing the right thing. And all of a sudden they're saying to me, oh, well, maybe I should be doing this instead. I haven't told them anything and they've worked it out themselves. So they own that answer that they're giving me.
Oh, Alan, I know what you're doing is absolutely fabulous. And you're such a generous grand giver in your community and in our community. I want to kind of end back and circle back to AI just at the end of this part one, okay? In our world an AI world now, the world is changing very rapidly. Why are human connection skills becoming even more valuable?
Well, being able to recognize whether, like looking at an image of somebody, for instance, you know, especially videos, deepfake videos, it's knowing to be able to pick up some of these indicators. They're going to get so good that you won't be able to pick up the difference. That's going to be one of the issues. But the tone of voice, et cetera, I've heard a conversation where the woman would get a phone call from what was supposed to be in one of the bottle shops, a wine outlet, talking about her special wine, the one that she really loved that come in and everything, got at a special price. I mean, she's talking back to the thing saying, no, I can't afford it. My husband's telling me I'm spending too much money. At the end of it, the sales conversation went right along really nicely. At the final point, she ended up getting a credit card out and buying some of the wine. And we found out that the voice she was talking to was totally AI.
Huh.
And so it's going to get that good. So it's going to get harder and harder, but the more skills you've got, the longer it's going to take before they can then have that advantage over you where you don't know the difference.
Yeah, I wonder how long it's going to take before they catch up. Like, it is the AI way better than it was a year ago.
Exactly. Yeah. It's getting to the point where, yes, you meet people on Zoom and things like that. If they're in your local area, it's going to be a face-to-face at some point. It has to be.
Yeah, yeah.
If they're overseas, we're going to have to find other ways to qualify and make sure they are who they are. And this is where, okay, checking websites, other things like that, looking at backgrounds, see how long they've been in the market, et cetera. All of that will give you an idea of, are they a real person? But in the conversations you have with them on Zoom, for instance, yeah, you'll be able to pick up whether they are a genuine person or not, as in their attitude, their beliefs, what they're telling you, whether they're being truthful.
And the people you know who know them, and you can get that through some of the connections in a community. People know each other.
That just means.
Yeah. And it's also like when money's crossing hands, like, you know, be careful of the fakes with somebody trying to urgently get you to give you some money for some reason and stuff like that. So lots of things to be aware of. We're going to do another podcast episode on that as the cyber safety now in an AI world. I think that would be a really good episode. So this has been a fascinating conversation because communication and understanding people really are at the heart of networking, referrals, collaboration, and building meaningful relationships. In part two, we're going to go deeper into emotional intelligence, collaboration dynamics, self-awareness. I know we've touched a bit on that already, and building stronger relationships in business and life. Alan, where can people connect with you and learn about your work?
Well, there's always best places. Find me on LinkedIn. You'll be able to see a lot of posts up there as well, because as you said, I like to keep educating people. You can find me very, very easily. But my website's probably the best, and that is alanstevens.com.au for Australia, and Alan with one L, A-L-A-N, and Stevens with a V.
Stevens with a V. And you have a free gift?
Yep. If they put the link into your show notes, if you like, there's a short course. We only take them 28 minutes to go through, but it will give them a couple of traits that they go out and look for in people and test them for themselves. Because when I grew up, my mother used to always say to me, Alan, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. No matter who the person is, you know, Gordon Ramsay or anybody else standing in front of you who's a chef and all the rest of it, you don't know how good their thing is until you put your set teeth into it and taste it. And so it's the same thing with what I can talk about this stuff. I can be very convincing and everything else, but you do not know how good it is until you test it for yourself. And once you test it for yourself, that removes the critic. As far as I don't know if these things work, oh, test it for yourself and get your own knowledge. Prove it to yourself.
That's exciting. So grab Alan's free gift and then come to a Grand Connection too, because you can practice some of the new skills you learn from his course in our community, because that's what we do. We're here to practice with each other to get clarity around our offers, clarity around what our communication styles are, and of course, become trusted connections where we can help each other grow in our business. So if you'd like to experience the Grand Connection, go to grandconnection.ca. You can grab your free guest pass and come to three events as a guest. And we also have a Grand Growth Bundle at grandconnection.ca/gifts. And it's filled with tools and resources to help you grow through connection, clarity, and collaboration. And here's one simple action for today. Become a little more curious in your next conversation and focus on truly understanding the person in front of you. Until next time, let's connect, create, and collaborate. Thank you for joining us on the Grand Connection podcast, where we achieve grand growth through collaboration together. If this episode sparked something for you, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with a friend looking for a community to support their growth. Before we sign off, today is a grand day to reach out to someone in your own network and reconnect. You never know where one conversation can lead. Until next time, let's connect, create, collaborate.